weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to the two Johnnies in Africa for the afternoon entertainment. It is Wednesday, May 15th. I am Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Shay Given reflects on a night where Manchester City's second-choice goalkeeper proves crucial to maintaining their Premier League advantage. Nadine Doherty reviews and previews ladies' football provincial final action, while Damien Lawler has the latest Gaelic Games news, and we'll hear from Derry's Pádraig McGrogan. And if that wasn't enough, Rory McIlroy is due to speak to the media ahead of the PGA Championship that tees off tomorrow, so we hope to hear from Rory, but we will be crossing live to Greg Allen at Valhalla Golf Course. We'll also be crossing live to Usheen Coyne at Dalyman Park ahead of a unique football clash that sees the Palestine women's team play their first ever match in Europe. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or we are on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Before we get into this evening's show, news headlines, and there are a lot of sports news today. League of Ireland news. Dundalk have been hit with more managerial upheaval as Noel King has stepped down with immediate effect after just 4 games in charge. The former Republic of Ireland interim boss informed the club he was departing due to medical reasons. On Monday, it was disclosed that head of football operations and former centre-half Brian Gartland was leaving after an 11-year association at the club. Dundalk confirmed that the new search for a permanent manager would commence immediately. Staying with League of Ireland news, an independent disciplinary committee of the FAI sanctioned UCD player Harry Curtis for using discriminatory language towards a Kerry FC player in their first division match on May 10th. An FAI statement said, in accordance with FIFA regulations and the FAI disciplinary regulations, Harry Curtis will serve a 10-match suspension. That decision may be appealed. However, UCD have released a statement since saying both player and club accept the committee's decision and will not be appealing. So a second 10-match suspension, the first coming for Dundalk's George Shelvey for language used against referee Rob Harvey. Staying with football, Pep Linders is set to take up the role of head coach at Austrian club Red Bull Salzburg following his departure from Liverpool. Dutchman Linders, who had initially worked under Brendan Rodgers, will leave Anfield along with manager Jurgen Klopp at the end of the Premier League campaign. Liverpool confirmed Vitor Matos, who spent 4.5 years as the club's elite development coach, will also be joining Salzburg as assistant to Linders. Cycling news. Now, we had Shane Stokes on the show yesterday and we were chatting about Sam Bennett, and hopefully he might get a stage win. He's currently competing in the competition, the 4 Days of Dunkirk. Well, great news. Sam Bennett has taken his first win of the 2024 season today when the Decathlon AG2R La Mondiale team rider was best in the bunch sprint that settled stage 2 of the 4 Days of Dunkirk. Ironically named because it is a 6-day competition. The Irishman, who is chasing return to the Tour de France in July after a 4-year absence, was third on the opening stage yesterday and is now taking the race lead with 4 stages remaining in a race. He is a contender to win overall. On cycling, Jonathan Milan delighted the home crowd as he won a bunch sprint finish on stage 11 of the Giro d'Italia. And finally, hockey. Deirdre Duke, Anna O'Flanagan and Chloe Watkins, 3 of the stars of Ireland's run to the 2018 Hockey World Cup final, have announced their international retirements. Duke made her debut back in June 2013 against Scotland, went on to play 173 times. O'Flanagan has been on the scene since July 2010 when she debuted against Scotland, going on to play 220 games. She's Ireland's all-time record goal scorer with 89 goals. Watkins made her debut in the same game as O'Flanagan against Scots in 2010, just a month after completing her leaving certificate. She went on to play on 242 occasions. Ireland, of course, head to Antwerp tomorrow to play 3 warm-up games against Italy, Belgium and India before travelling on to Spain on May 27th ahead of their opening game of the FIH Nations Cup. Sinead for News Headlines. Nadine Doherty, how are you?
I'm great, Ian. How are you?
I'm very well. We will be, as I mentioned, previewing in detail the Ulster final and Munster final and reviewing the Leinster final and Connacht final in ladies football. However, I haven't seen you since Jimmy's winning matches, Donegal. Like, it's Sam Bar's wrapped up now.
No. I'm only right today, though.
You enjoyed yourself.
I enjoyed myself. It was incredible, Shane. Mm. You know, and I remember, I think it was us, we sat here when Jimmy got the gig, and I remember saying, like, there is potential to win an Ulster Championship there because of the players and obviously the magic that he brings. The manner in which they did it, I mean, the route they took, obviously, that's been well documented, to beat Derry, to beat Tyrone. The penalty shootout, look, it is what it is, you know.
Are you a fan?
I just think you can't have it all, Shane. You know, like you can't have a condensed season with replays. It's very difficult. You know, there were a couple of years ago here when provincial championships and games were going to replays and the GAA would get criticised for the price of it for families. So, you know, I think from a player's perspective, and especially with Armagh having lost now twice on the bounce. But look, I just felt with Donegal over the course of the Ulster Championship, I think the best team are Ulster champions. I think they played the best football. And listen, Jimmy just brought that magic and Donegal needed that lift. And I think it's been, you know, widely reported and not even on the pitch and, you know, in terms of GAA circles, Shane. But, you know, there's a Donegal at the minute with Mike. There's a lot going on in Donegal. You know, people have gone through a lot and we're football mad up there. We're absolutely mad about football. And it's just given a huge lift altogether. And they were brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant. What a game. I mean,
breathtaking.
It really was. I mean, again, it's been widely documented all week. Just the scores and so on. They were just unbelievable. But I just felt with the game itself, you know, Armagh obviously with the penalties, they'll be disappointed. But I thought there were a few passages of play that were so important. I think Niall O'Donnell's 2 points. When Donegal really looked dead and buried, Shane, they did, and I was panicking myself. They looked leggy, they looked tired, and you were kind of thinking, you know, has the Tyrone and Derry, have those games taken their toll? And Niall got 2 unbelievable scores on the trot, and that brought us back into it. And I think for Armagh, when they look back, they had 2 chances to take marks and take scores from those marks. They took a mark from the exact same position in the first half when the pressure wasn't on and they had those opportunities to take them. They didn't even look to take a mark, you know, or, you know, look to take a score. So I think in that regard, you know, they look back there especially and I think they were key moments whereby they could have pushed on and that would have been, you know, in regular time. But yeah, as I said, over the course of the whole Ulster Championship, I think the best team won and obviously as a Donegal person, I'm absolutely thrilled and congratulations to them.
Well, from one Donegal legend to another, because earlier today I sat down with Shay Given, with thanks to Just Eat, who have teamed up with the former Republic of Ireland goalkeeper to produce a video titled Any Given Wednesday, which is now live across all the Just Eat social media channels. In a wide-ranging conversation, we touched on Donegal's push for the Sam Maguire, as Nadine has outlined there, and the joy that the Ulster title has brought, in the need for improved League of Ireland facilities, and Finn Harp's new stadium plans was also part of our conversation. But I began by asking Shay about Stefan Ortega's heroic cameo to keep Manchester City in the driving seat for this year's Premier League title.
Well, amazing. I mean, you think of, I suppose, if anyone gets to see the Just Eat ad, there's a scene of me dressed as Al Pacino and giving an Al Pacino speech, but it's about margins and inches, you know, when he does that big, amazing speech in his film. And you know, last night was like that with Stefan Ortega. It was inches. I mean, that's Son chance, especially. I mean, a couple of good blocks as well before that, actually. But the Son opportunity it felt like a moment in time. It kind of went in slow motion type thing, you know, that it was, he was going to score. And again, as you say, just off the bench, not, you know, it's difficult. I think probably the most difficult position, excuse me, to come on as the goalkeeper. And to make that save, the importance of that save at 1-0, you know, had it went to 1-1, you know, the psychology of the City players, because I think they were a bit nervy at times last night. It's shown they're human after all, you know, but I think that save was if you think of the results and the much hard work they've got to this part of the season, to get to this stage of the season, you know, came down, you know, to the number 2 goalkeeper, you know, at Tottenham, and what a big save that was. And again, it's a tough position with number 2, and you know, he has to be super sharp and be ready. I think it's the 4th time he came on, the commentator said last night, you know, as a sub keeper this year, and you can see Ederson was raging coming off because it was a pretty heavy challenge on him. It looked like he was badly swollen and shook up, you know. But I suppose it shows the character of Ederson. He wanted to stay on as well, and because he knew the importance of the game. But you know, Pep the master, you know, thought better and thought, this, we need to get this guy off. And again, when you have a number 2 as good as Stefan Ortega, then. And he proved it again. You know, what a big performance.
I'm a bit of a goalkeeper nerd, admittedly. So just talk me through that Son save in particular. Is that just a battle of wits and just trying to outguess your opponent?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the German goalkeepers in general have got a really, you know, different way of maybe doing a 1v1 situation. You know, I think he really, I mean, if you looked at it, it's probably textbook, really. Any young kids re-watch the save. He kept his balance really well, you know, and sort of put the pressure back on Son. You know, you see some goalkeepers coming out in a 1v1 situation and sometimes guess and go one way, and, you know, he rolls it in easy the other way, you know, whereas Ortega came out, got his balance, was a really good position in the goal, and kind of put the pressure back on Son to say, okay, you try and beat me now because I ain't moving. Do you know what I mean? So then it was like, you know, it was just brilliant the way he sort of maybe shimmied to go to his left and then stuck his right foot out. And it just such an important block, you know, and Son will look back and probably do that 9 times out of 10, will score that chance, you know, but just in that big moment, that key, it was just a fantastic save. And again, you know, for any young kids, it was the perfect scenario that you're trying to put as much pressure on the guy coming through as possible. And I think he played it brilliantly.
I think I saw a stat last night. Barry Murphy, former League of Ireland keeper, said 20% of second choice keepers have played in all Premier League games this year, which is just, it's crazy to think.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, Dubravka at Newcastle's a big one as well. He's come in and done really well, you know. And again, you know, Dubravka probably sat the whole of last season, you know, on the bench or whatever. You get a bit rusty, don't you? You don't play so much as well. So, yeah, I mean, Ortega, he was linked with the move, I think, last summer, you know, Shane away from the club, you know. So maybe after last night, maybe linked again this summer, perhaps, you know. But it just shows you the importance of a number two goalkeeper as well.
Yeah. And the importance for Manchester City now, getting that victory firmly in the driving seat. Are you confident they will see it out this weekend?
Quietly confident, yeah. I mean, it's crazy because I was there a couple of years ago for Premier League TV, and, you know, we had the full camera crew. Because, you know, I'm doing the same on Sunday, actually. We're going to go and hopefully watch the trophy lift, and I get to interview some of the players on the pitch and all, you know. So it's quite a nice thing to do. But a couple of years ago, we were Aston Villa, the last game of the season, and we were 2-0 down. I was telling the camera crew, you might as well go to Anfield, because, you know, they're not going to need us after the game, basically, because it looked like the title had gone. And again, before that game, you know, everyone think Aston Villa would be an easy enough home game to finish the season. And I suppose you can go back further, Shane. You look at the QPR game when Aguero scored that goal in the 90th minute or something, you know, and they were losing and got into the 90th minute. So it's, I think I'm confident, but at the same time, in sport and football, you know, it's one mistake, even last night, going back to last night, that chance, I think it was an Akanji mistake or a slipover. And again, the whole title can just swivel on its head on one moment. And I suppose that's why we all love football. You know, it's such a... And again, you know, the Premier League's gone down to the last game of the season. I suppose you have to give Arsenal great credit as well for running the race all the way to the end, whereas they fell short last year, didn't they? And they might fall short this year again, but they're taking it right down to the wire.
Yeah, no, it is incredible considering the resources that Manchester City have, that Arsenal are pushing them all the way. You mentioned Aston Villa there, another one of your former clubs. So last night's result, of course, means they're secured Champions League football for next season. What's impression most about Unai Emery at Aston Villa this season?
Well, I mean, just if you look back, I sort of was compared a little bit to the Eddie Howe taking over Newcastle, if I'm being honest. You know, they're in a relegation fight, and the following season they got into the Champions League. And it's amazing when you get on a run, I think, of performances and victories and you know, the players buying into your management skills and your beliefs and how you want to set up your team and how you want to play. You know, it can go in a bit of a snowball effect, and it feels that way at Aston Villa as well. It feels at Unai Emery, you know, everyone's, you know, sort of worshipping and rightly so because of the job he's done. And I think he's got a lot of control of the football club, whereas, you know, sometimes the modern day managers, it's your head coach now, but I think he's got a huge say with who comes in. I think they brought a new head of recruitment in. You know, I think he's got all the say in a lot of the things. You know, maybe even go back to, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson, when he wasn't just the coach, he was the manager. You know what I mean? I think Unai Emery's a bit the old school like that as well, but it just shows if you put faith in someone. And of course, they've got two very wealthy owners as well. People shouldn't forget it, Aston Villa. And, you know, they can go again, perhaps, maybe in the summer and have a real push in the Champions League next year.
I feel like we're just rattling through all of your former clubs, but to be fair, Newcastle.
Might as well. We've come this far. You might as well.
Swindon be next now. Don't worry. Newcastle are playing Manchester United this evening. The season probably hasn't gone the way Eddie Howe would have liked it. Perhaps. How do you sum up their season in your point of view?
Well, do you know what? There was this period in the middle. I mean, the Champions League, I was involved in all the Champions League nights this year, you know, with TV and my media work and stuff. And, you know, I managed to get to Milan and Dortmund and Paris. You know, it's like, it's reminiscent of when I played for Newcastle 20 years ago and traveling all around Europe. But again, you're a player and you're in the hotel and you're in a bus, you're in an airplane, you don't see the city and all that kind of stuff. Whereas I've had a bit different experience this year and been down the square before games and the sing songs and all the fans go mental. You know, it's very, very special, you know. So the only thing I think that sort of Eddie struggled with this year was the workload on the players and the amount of injuries they had, because the extra games, obviously, in the Champions League hit them hard, I think. they all want to be there. Maybe Aston Villa could even learn a lesson. You know, the squad probably wasn't deep enough or strong enough to compete on all fronts, and they really struggled. There was a period of maybe 5 or 6, 7 weeks there was the same outfield 10 players that played every single minute, you know, and no disrespect to the kids on the bench. You look around, there were just, you know, a bunch of kids from the academy. You know, there were so many key injuries to key players. So, but again, Shane, if they can finish, you know, if they go to Old Trafford tonight and they can win the game, you know, there's such a great chance of finishing the top six. And I really think that's a successful season. I really do, on the back of a Champions League campaign and a dip in the middle of the season in the Premier League. I think if they can finish strong and on a high in the top six, I think the owners will be very happy with Eddie Howe.
Stepping away from association football for a moment, I do have to mention Sean Paton and his save for Donegal in the Ulster final penalty shootout win. Were you watching?
Do you know what? I was working for Match of the Day on Sunday. I was at Old Trafford and I was getting updates on my phone. My phone was hopping because it was one of them games that seemed that was never ending. I was like, because it kept back and forward on the points. Yeah, like, what's happening? Then extra time, and then obviously, as you say, penalties, and Paton was a hero at the end, you know, so... Just really happy for everyone. I mean, I know Jim McGuinness really well, so text Jim after the game, and just delighted that you know he's it's amazing what he's done. You know, the last couple of years, everyone's talking. I don't know, he's put in inverted commas if you want, but how bad Donegal is and how they used to be a great team, and you know they've gone and blah 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 blah. So that he listened to a lot of negativity in recent years, you know. So it's quite nice now to have this, you know, the Ulster champions now and gotten on to the. You know, love to all Ireland, of course. It's really tough, but you know, Jim has brought that belief. You talk about what manager to talk about in Emirates before, but Jim McGuinness has brought the belief back to these Donegal players and even the Donegal people that, you know, he's a man who knows what he's doing, and again the players are buying into every single thing he's doing and bringing to the team, and again results, you know, have been absolutely brilliant.
Do you have the belief that Jim can bring the Sam Maguire back to Donegal?
Of course, we have to believe what they say, shoot for the stars, in it, and see where it takes you. That's the motto. And I think that's Jim's motto, if I'm being honest. You know, there's no ceiling to, you know, where this team can go. And yeah, maybe a bit young and inexperienced when it comes to the, you know, winning all Ireland's, but at the same time, you know, sometimes younger players have no fear, and they've also got huge fitness levels and things that Jim would work hard on them as well. So I know it's not going to be easy, Shane, but again, we're in there fighting, and we just never know. You never know.
That's sitting on the fence. That's a very political answer today, but I'll let you away with it. Staying in the same location, Donegal, I see you've showed your support for Finn Harps on their ground proposals. You're linking up with the club on Friday ahead of their match against UCD.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we've got a Friday evening. We've got a bit of a get together. Ian Harkin, the chairman's going to say a bit, and I've got a Q&A with Tommy Martin, and just talking about building a new stadium in Donegal, which I'm not sure if everyone knows, but it's like a €7.3 million stadium, which is a, you know, a huge investment. I think the government are involved as well, but they're still helping, you know, they still need to fundraise and things like that as well, Shane, you know. So, but if you can imagine bringing that stadium to Donegal, obviously Finn Park has not seen maybe a paintbrush for 10 years, never mind a development thing, you know. So they've got big, massive plans they have, you know, and I think a lot of the, you know, the Dublin-based Donegal people are going to be there on Friday evening as well before the UCD game. And also, yeah, I'm looking forward to being over there and seeing people and even seeing the plans for the new stadium. And again, you know, I think not just Finn Harps, but all the League of Ireland teams, you know, if they can get this sort of backing and financial support, then, you know, we want to build the league. Of course we do. And look at, you know, I mean, you've got a Shelburne top there people can't see because we're on radio. But, you know, the job, for example, Damien Duff's doing at Shelburne is phenomenal. And you know, the League of Ireland seems to be going from strength to strength.
Final one. How important is it to keep the pressure on all stakeholders to ensure that we do have the adequate football facilities in this country? As someone that who has devoted their life to Irish football like yourself.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, people talk about the Ireland senior team at the minute, and that's the big talking point, you know, because we haven't qualified for a few majors and stuff. But it's all about the grassroots, and it's all about the next crop of players. And obviously, with the football team, you're competing against the Gaelic, which have brilliant facilities. And of course, the rugby team now as well, who are number one or number two in the world or whatever they are. They're absolutely flying, aren't they? And we all support that. We support the Gaelic and the rugby. But at the same time, you know, football's a migrant. And again, the better the facilities and the more the kids will want to go and play. And, you know, obviously the weather in Ireland is not always so great, you know, so I know a lot of clubs are having sort of 3G and all weather pitches so the kids can play through the winter and stuff as well. So, look, it's really important that the businesses really get behind them and support the, you know, their teams and the clubs and the and the youth teams and all, because that's the next generation, and that's the, you know, the players will come through and play for Ireland eventually and get us to major tournaments again, you know. So you do urge all the businesses to support as much as they can.
Jay, you're a gentleman. Appreciate it. Wish you all the best of luck with Newcastle's European run, Finn Harp's ground proposals, your blossoming acting career with the Just Eat.
I'm going to Hollywood next year. It's the only way I can trump this is being the red carpet next year. So if I don't get there, Shane, I've failed in life. To Hollywood, I've failed, man.
High expectations for now, Shay Given. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Shane. Thank you.
That was Shay Given, former Republic of Ireland goalkeeper and budding actor. A text in: did Will Clark meet government today regarding the LOI academies? Just on the topic of that, considering we were speaking with Shay earlier, the League of Ireland did hold a briefing session at Leinster House on League of Ireland academy development and the potential that exists around the country in the League of Ireland, both with Will Clark and Shane Robinson from the FAI. I believe Michael Ring, TD, arranged for that. So yes, texter, and hopefully there is progress with League of Ireland academies. Exclusive news from David Ornstein in The Athletic, and that is Premier League clubs are going to vote on a proposal to scrap VAR from next season. A resolution formally submitted by Wolves to abolish the system will be on the agenda at June 6th. That is the date for their AGM. So any rule changes need a two-thirds majority, so 14 of the 20 members to pass. So very, very intriguing, that one. We are going to leave our football there. Lots more to come. Nadine Doherty is still with us at the preview of those provincial finals. Damien Lawler has the latest Gaelic Games news. We'll be crossing live to Dalymount Park ahead of Bohemian FC women's team against the Palestine women's national team. But up next, we will hear from Roy McIlroy and be chatting to Greg Allen on golf, who is at the PGA Championship. And indeed, we'll be chatting to Damien as well. Stick with us here. Lots to come on Game On 2FM.
Game On.
Golf.
Now, the PGA Championship tees off tomorrow at Valhalla Golf Club, and Rory McIlroy has just finished his press conference, so we can hear from Rory today speaking to the media a few moments ago.
Yeah, you know, I feel good. Obviously had a great day on Sunday with, you know, at a golf course that I've grown to love over the years and had a lot of success at, coming to a venue where I've had some success at before as well. Obviously get to go back to Quail Hollow every year. Don't really get to come back here too much. You know, this is the first time today I was on the golf course since 10 years ago. So it was good to refamiliarize myself with the place. Golf course is a little different than it was 10 years ago, a little longer. You know, a couple of little minor changes, but for the most part, pretty much the same that I can remember from 10 years ago. So, but yeah, look, game feels good coming off the back of two wins, you know, a fun one in New Orleans with Shane, and then a really good performance last week. So, you know, just trying to keep the momentum going.
So that was Rory McIlroy speaking at the US PGA Championship at Valhalla, and I'm delighted to say that Greg Allen joins us now live from Valhalla. Greg, let us begin our conversation on Rory, who we've just heard from there. He's coming into it in good form. What are your expectations of Rory McIlroy?
Well, firstly, the press conference lasted 8 minutes and 52 seconds, which is even shorter than his Masters press conference. That was deliberate. At the beginning of the press conference, there was a reference by the moderator to the statement yesterday, because obviously there was a statement from Rory McIlroy's communications team yesterday confirming his scenario with regard to a divorce. And so at the very beginning, that was stressed, that the communications team had asked for this being a difficult time, that the press conference be respectful and amicable, or certainly the questioning would not refer to anything with regard to that. So his desire to ensure that it was respectful and amicable was completely adhered to. There were no questions whatsoever. So that thing out of the way is, I suppose, important in terms of the way that Rory McIlroy is focusing on the week ahead. He has said, of course, as we know, that he thrives to some degree in difficult times. And I think he said actually after winning in Quail Hollow at the weekend that for whatever reason he seems to play very good golf whenever he has a lot of stuff going on. He also said it's nice to get inside the ropes for 4 or 5 hours to escape from everything else that's going on in the world. That was a reference to matters live and all of that. So Rory McIlroy comes into this with a fantastic run of form over the last, say, 5 rounds of golf in particular, because I think it really began for him in the foursomes match alongside Shane Lowry in the Zurich. It was the final round of the Zurich, and they got into a point where they could win, and they didn't start that round terribly well. But the last 12 holes, Rory McIlroy drove the ball and just did about everything extraordinarily well, vintage McIlroy, and that carried forward into the Wells Fargo last week, where he played well in all four rounds and then absolutely dazzled on Sunday. I mean, he double bogeyed the last hole because the concentration was off, and he hit a brilliant iron shot into the green, but bounced over the back into the water. It was still a really good shot, just a bit aggressive. He could have shot a 63 on a day when the par of 71 was a really resilient par figure, and he won by 5, could have won by 7. And you know, this is Rory McIlroy that we haven't seen really, I suppose, since, you know, certainly he played well last year, but 2022 when he won the FedEx, he was in that type of form at times. So here he is coming into a major golf championship with so many of the stars aligning, because he himself actually referred to the stars aligning last Sunday, allowed himself to say that because, you know, it's 10 years ago when he won 3 events in a row. In that occasion, it was the Open Championship at Hoylake, the WGC at Firestone, and then he won in Valhalla, here where I'm sitting now, in the USPGA Championship in 2014. And here we have him winning the last 2 events that he's played in, the Zurich Classic, albeit a four-ball team event, or a foursome and four-ball team event. And then, of course, last week he won in Quail Hollow, which is a very, very similar challenge to what we have here. A big advantage is bestowed upon golfers who can drive the ball long through the air, carry water hazards, carry bunkers, carry doglegs, and he did that last week in Quail Hollow. And this is a very, very similar challenge here. 7,609 yards, and it's par 71, so it like plays about 7,800 yards on a standard par 72, and it's had 4 inches of rain over the last 2 weeks here, so it's soft. It's going to play long. It's going to play right into his hands. His form is terrific, Shane. I mean, and he's turned it around from being fairly average for the first, 3 months of the season after he won in Dubai. He only had one, I think, tournament finish inside the top 20 on the PGA Tour until he had that Zurich finish. So that is the type of form that he has suddenly seemed to switch over into vintage McIlroy. Can he carry it into this particular championship 10 years after he'd won his last major championship? 10 years ago, he won 3 in a row, culminating in a major. This week, this 10-year kind of gap could be bookended by a victory here this week. Okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves. There's 4 days to go. There's Scottie Scheffler in the way. There's Brooks Koepka in the way, both of whom have won in their last starts coming in here. But, you know, there's a certain element of a lot of very good vibes for Rory McIlroy coming in this week. I'm very hopeful Shane Lowry's going to have a really good week. He plays well in the USPGA, really has had strong last 4 or 5 years. He, of course, was fourth in Kiawah Island just 3 years ago. And, you know, he gets a feeling now that the major championships are something that really suit him. So I think Shane Lowry's going to have a good, strong week. He spoke very confidently yesterday. Not too confidently, but he knows that this is a big hitter's course and he's a medium range hitter. And I think even Patrick Harrington might be very, very happy to do what he did last year. Made the cut in all 3 majors that he played in last year, and think Patrick Harrington at 52 years of age with bandages on both knees and a sore neck which gives him plenty of excuse for the week, but I think he's got a very good chance of making the cut. He's playing well enough.
Great stuff. Greg Allen, live from Valhalla, thank you very much for checking in. Marie, we'll be chatting to Greg tomorrow when play does start. Rory McIlroy tees off at 1:15 Irish time, Shane Lowry at 18 minutes past 6. And Harrington is among the late starters as well, 7:55 Irish time as well. So lots to look forward to in the USPGA Championship. We are taking a short break, then Damien Lawler is next, as is Derry's Pádraig McGrogan.
Game on.
GAA.
Now, Damien Lawler is standing by, but before we chat to Damien himself, he's been chatting to Derry footballer Pádraig McGrogan, who unfortunately is out for the rest of the season with a cruciate injury.
Watching Derry evolve over the last 2 or 3 years, Pádraig, probably maybe 4 years ago, were a very defensive unit, and then over the last 2 especially would have had that transition or that counter-attacking game. Then I suppose, I know you're not the manager, but so much good work has come from Oran Lynch coming up the field and making these runs. And do you just throw everything out of the bat after 1 day, or do you actually trust the process, you know?
No, you can't really just leave it to say. Like, you look at, if you watch back other league games this year, like, the keeper coming out has benefited massively. Like, it's got us some big scores, and it's helped us dominate the game in times when, like, teams just couldn't get out. And Donegal, they exploited it because they simply just outnumbered us, and they didn't try to pick around with the shorts, and that allowed them to dominate that battle, and they made full advantage of it. But look, even, like, you look back at some of the goals, like, even if And then she was back in the net. Like, it would have been a walking goal anyway. There's maybe five or six Donegal goal men emerging in to the 45. Like, it would have been a walking goal regardless. Look, you have to break it down, but look, you're beat. There's not much more you can do about it on the day. And that's what you do after that then, I suppose. That really, really matters. And that's yet to be seen.
Game on. GAA.
So that was Derry's Pádraig McGrogan speaking to Damien Lawler, who is on the line. As I mentioned at the start there, Damien, obviously Pádraig McGrogan is going to miss the rest of the championship, unfortunately, with that ACL injury. But for Derry, they'll be looking for a big response considering their early exit from the Ulster Championship.
Yeah, an early doors against Donegal in the Ulster Championship, Shane. It was actually going okay. Like things were going according to their script. Ethan Doherty was in fine form. I think Paul Cassidy was going well. I think Derry had won Donegal's opening three kickouts, and you know, they were really, really business as usual. And Darrell Wheel then got a goal like later in the first half, and that strike kind of changed absolutely everything. And Donegal, I suppose, needed inspiration. They found it through Caelan McGonigal and Ryan McHugh, because McHugh was winning breaking ball everywhere. But effectively, Donegal proceeded for the rest of the game after a Wheels goal to take out five and six Derry players, including the goalkeeper Oran Lynch, with every kickout from Sean Patton. And there were monster kickouts, and they were beating the Derry press every single time, and alarmingly, Derry didn't react to it. You know, and Derry conceded four goals and didn't score any. And I think the alarm bells were ringing that there was no reaction to that. And, you know, McGrogan was talking about maybe getting word on the pitch and the players can't be so naive again. But structurally, you know, they have issues there. And I suppose, I think Pádraig was mentioning in that interview, they've literally taken that game apart. Now, Jim McGuinness obviously had his homework done as well. And McGrogan was making the point that even if Lynch had put, some of those goals were going to be walk-ins because of the amount of Derry players were taken out by the long kick-out. So the question now, against Galway, and Conor Gleeson is well capable of firing it over the top as well. The question for Derry is, does Oran Lynch do the Wanderlust gig again? And my sense is he will, but he'll be a little bit more cautious. And what do they do with the kick-out then? Because Donegal have shown Galway a template to get at Derry. So what do Derry do? Do they sit back off the kick-out now and invite Galway onto them and try and turn them over in the tackle? And that maybe could be the wise thing to do, and hit Galway on the counter away from home. On the flip side of things, Galway are absolutely buoyant. It was their third Connacht title in a row. You saw in the final whistle what the celebrations meant to the team. Shane Walsh is back. Shane Walsh and Damien Comer actually played a game together. And Shane Walsh may be drifting out to the half-forward line because he didn't get a sniff of the ball for nearly 20 minutes on the field, and he found a way to manoeuvre himself into that game. And from a Derry point of view, you know, they're going to have to watch him. They're going to have to watch Comer. They probably are going to have to get numbers back. And at the same time, then Galway can pick you off. 2022, the All-Ireland semi-final, Galway had the edge there. They had the edge earlier in that year's league as well. The form charts have flipped, though. And the key thing, before I stop talking, the key thing is now, was that Donegal result just a mere blip in an otherwise excellent year for Derry? Or, you know, have they had flaws exposed that they need to be working on, and they've had a few weeks to do that? So there can't be any excuse, really. They've had time to recover from the Donegal defeat. They've had time to study Galway and size them up. And I think even though the round-robin series is not sudden death or far from it, you need to get off to a good start now. So it's a crucial, crucial game.
Okay, good stuff. Finally, Damien, just before I do let you go, last Wednesday on air, we didn't know exactly why, but we both felt Cork, they could do Limerick. And that's exactly what happened. So now we're in for some more make or break Munster hurling this weekend, Damien.
Yeah, so go to the other game first. Clare versus Waterford. They met in the Allianz League earlier in the year. There was 1 point between two teams. I think one today, Waterford had 8 scorers, Clare only had 7, but Shane O'Donnell wasn't playing for Clare, and Desi Hutchinson wasn't playing for Waterford either. Lowen's had the better of the record in recent times between the two managers. The game is in Cusick Park. Clare will be expected to surge forward and go another step towards claiming their place. But Davy will be devastated to have lost that finale to Tipperary. They drew the game, but he's coming in there now with a couple of points, with 3 points, and he'll feel like in his own backyard. This is a massive statement for them, and if they are to win All-Ireland or to win Munsters or even get out of Munster, these are the games that they must win. So they went off to the training camp. Clearly things worked after that week. They've had a good result. They've had maybe a disappointing finish to an otherwise great performance. They've had time to recover themselves and to take on Clare in their own backyard. Clare are back on the wagon after their opening round defeat to Limerick as well. Move to Thurles then. You know, you are looking at the likelihood of a massive Cork support, possibly outnumbering the home support on Sunday. And that has to be said. You saw the reaction to the scenes, Cork versus Limerick last week. Cork's speed of play, their physicality, their intensity. You'd imagine on paper it would be too much for Tipperary this weekend, a Tipperary team that's still trying to find its way. Question is, will they mentally be able to tune it back on? And will they physically be able to get back up to the level of the frenzy that they were at last Saturday night from start to finish? Because in fairness to Cork, from the opening gambit to that game, right through to half-time, they stuttered a bit after half-time, after the restart, but they really recovered strongly. To clinch a deserved win. And to be unlucky in recent games. Now, Cork are being accused of being inconsistent over the past few seasons. Here's the chance now to nail all that and say back-to-back wins when it was needed most. We're literally out of the championship in many ways, one foot out of the championship, and look how we've responded. As regards Tipperary, Shane, the key question here is, Bonner Maher and John McGrath changed the game against Waterford last time. Does he go with them from the start, or does he bring in those guys with Noel McGrath? Secondly, have they a bit of pace that they could hope their forwards might be able to exploit? And the big question is, will that comeback against Waterford, will that have changed the direction of their season? Because they looked out of energy and looked out of ideas until that last gas finale against Waterford. And it just shows that they are still buying into it. Whether they're as progressed as Cork, it remains to be seen. Do or die, really, in some ways, in that game, and certainly in the Waterford Clare game, so much up for grabs as well. It's a massive Munster Championship weekend, Shane, and I'm delighted now to be at one of those games. I'll be in Thurles.
Oh, look at you, Damien. Look at you. I envy you, yeah. I must say. So many narratives across football and hurling this weekend. It's going to be a cracking weekend of Gaelic Games actions. For now, Damien Lawler, RT Sport. Thanks, as always, for taking the call.
Game on.
GAA.
Now, that was Damien Lawler, and a little bit earlier speaking to Pádraig McGrogan in conjunction with Allianz, their launch of the upcoming championship. So big thanks to Allianz for facilitating that. Nadine Doherty is patiently standing by, still with us, to look ahead at what will hopefully be two cracking provincial championship, or provincial finals, I should say. However, before we preview, let us review. Big win for the Dubs, which we will get to. However, Mayo, 111. Galway, 9 points.
Other way around.
My apologies to all our Galway listeners that I've just done them out of a provincial title. Big win for the tribeswomen.
Yeah, and look, as we said last week, Shane, you asked me what way will it go and didn't have a clue what way it would go. It's a funny game, didn't really have a provincial final feel to it, probably because of the venue, perhaps. You know, we spoke about that last week. Pitch was lovely, Kiltoon was great, but, you know, small stand, there were kids playing football in another pitch in the background. You know, it was an odd feel to it, but very even first half. Galway had, again, we spoke about what team would Galway put out. They largely stuck with their league team. Louise Ward was a late change into the starting lineup. She didn't play much league football and made a huge difference. I mean, the pace she brings to Galway is incredible. Very even first half, 6 points each. Nobody was really going for it. It was, you know, it was all a bit tetchy. It was kind of swinging either way. And then the second half, Shane, it was like Galway just came out and they just drove on. Mayo had a goal chance in the first 5 minutes of the second half, and that was all they threatened for a good 20 minutes. Galway just tagged on points. They turned the screw. Olivia Jevely was very good in that period. She got like 4 points, I think, or 3 points out of the four. And Mayo missed a few chances at the other end, but nothing significant. And then they just kind of came to life in the last couple of minutes. They got it back to within two. They had a chance. They got a point, turned over the Galway kick out. They went direct, and for some reason, they turned back into the middle. Galway turned them over and they went down the pitch, and Andrea Trill got a finished well, actually, a goal on the break. Overall, you have to say Galway deserved it. Mayo were quite one-dimensional. It was the kind of game, I suppose, Shane, where you could really see that neither team had a competitive game in a long time. You know, and that's, I suppose, when we talk about provincials, that's the big downside when you're in a provincial championship and there's only two teams. So
there's not much to read from it in terms of their All-Ireland aspirations or ambitions. It's silverware for Galway, which is always a good thing, and will always do the panel a bit of confidence.
Yeah, definitely a bit of confidence. I mean, you were looking at that, and then we'll come to it. You were looking at Dublin and Meath and Croke Park, and even though Dublin won significantly well. The pace of the game, there was way more of a pace to the game. At the minute, you know, I can't really see Mayo and Galway. They don't look anywhere near All-Ireland challengers, but look, it's a long way to go and they'll have a say in it in some form. But no, it wouldn't have inspired you to think, wow, you could have an All-Ireland challenger here. But look, by the nature of the groups, you have a few groups and two teams go 3 out of 3, so they'll definitely make a quarter final. But no, nothing to blow you away, but hopefully, you know, both teams will get a bit more game time now with the group stages and things will improve there.
Well, congrats to Galway. Commiserations to Mayo. Dublin 3-17, Meath 8 points. You did predict that it was going to be a heavy win for Dublin, which I was a bit taken back. I was like, I thought it'd be a bit more competitive, and then I watched it and I was like, well, no, Nadine was bang on, as always.
Well, no, not as always at all. But yeah, look, the first 5 minutes, it was good. You know, Meath kept pace. You know, they got a score and you were just kind of waiting for Dublin to kick on, and they did. Now, in saying that, it was a huge scoreline and Dublin were probably value for it. But Meath will definitely look back and they force Abby Shields into a couple of tricky saves. You know, they had a few goal chances themselves, but I mean, overall, it was all to Emma Duggan, Shane, and that, as we say it every week, you know, that's, and you could see her getting frustrated at times. I think Dublin will be very happy. It was professional performance. They attacked in waves. They always had an overlap. But I think when McBohan looks at it, which they have, I'd imagine already, I think they will be disappointed in aspects of their play, especially with that final pass. They were a bit sloppy at times and they will be looking to improve in that regard. You know, it was a case that they could have just popped the ball over the bar, but they were nearly trying to force it in.
Monica McGurk made
a few brilliant saves.
Excellent saves. Yeah,
really 3 or 4 brilliant saves. But again, from a Dublin perspective, you know, they probably should have been hand passes over the bar, or you're recycling the ball out. But yeah, they were excellent. I thought Carla Rowe, especially in the first half, was fantastic. She was instrumental in everything they did. Hannah Turrell was excellent. A few brilliant scores. She seems to do that against Meath in Croke Park. She always seems to get on the end of things. Dublin, you know, their kick out strategy was very impressive. They really put Meath under huge pressure, Shane. Like, they had 4 block inside. They had 4 in Meath's full back line covering that. They had another 4 or 5 between the 45 and the halfway, 3 across the middle, and Meath just, they had no room to breathe, Shane. They just could not get that ball into play. And I think with Dublin, what kind of summed up their brilliant performance was Niamh Heatherton's score. There was about 8 minutes left, I think, or 3 or 4 minutes left, sorry. And they were up 3-14, whatever it was, to 8 points. And they turned the ball over with Leah Caffrey, I think 2 or 3 passes, and it was into Heatherton. It was over the bar, and it was just real vintage, brilliant Dublin. So look, they'll push on. They'll be very happy with that provincial title, Shane. It's 11 in a row. And I think the manner in which they won it was very impressive. They were clinical and they put teams to the sword, and yeah, very, very good. And everybody got game time, you know.
That strength and depth is
it's huge.
Scary.
Huge.
So wins for Dublin and Galway. Cork, Kerry. Kerry going into this as favourites, however. Cork, they sprung a surprise last year. Might they do the same this year?
No, I don't think so, simply because of the form, really, the consistent poor form they showed in the league. And in their defence, they've had a very good provincial championship. They've ground out results against Tip and Waterford. I thought either Tip or Waterford would make the final, so in fairness to Cork in that regard, they've done very, very well. Kerry have looked very comfortable, Shane, throughout, again, without overextending themselves, no more than Dublin. Huge amount of game time. They got a huge amount of game time into players. You know, the round robin game, whereby Kerry probably put out their strongest team of the Munster campaign, as did Cork. It was 114-110, and you know, Kerry didn't really get over the line until the last couple of minutes. So I think Cork, look, they're at home, it's in Mallow, they'll probably fancy their chances. I just can't see it with Kerry. I can't see Kerry letting that happen 2 years in a row.
Will it be tight though, or are we looking at a Dublin Meath kind of scoreline here?
No, I don't think it'll be a Dublin Meath scoreline. I really don't think so, because I don't think in terms of how Kerry have tapered their training that they're that far ahead, and I think personnel wise I don't think they have the strength ahead of Cork that Dublin have ahead of Meath, if that makes sense. Personnel wise Danielle O'Leary has been really impressive for them, and I think for Kerry players, obviously number one for them, it's to win that Munster Championship back, but I think second of all, you're going to have a lot of girls in here playing this weekend, putting their hand up for a starting position, especially up front for Kerry. They've really strengthened in that area this year, and yeah, it'll be people people putting their hands up for a championship spot, I think.
Okay, 4 p.m. in Mallow on Saturday, as you mentioned there. 3:30 in Clonus on Sunday. Armagh, Donegal. Armagh, understandably, huge favourites against your own Donegal, Nadine.
Yeah, huge, Shane. I mean, they've been massively impressive this year. You know, last year they were huge favourites as well, and Donegal managed to turn them over. To everybody's surprise, myself included, but things are very different this year. You know, Donegal were a Division 1 team last year. They had players coming back in. There were a few surprises in their lineup, whereas this year, Donegal are very much a Division 2 team. They're a young team. They're building back up. They failed to get back up to Division 1, which I'd say they're slightly disappointed with. You know, I think this game for Donegal, obviously they're going to have to win the game. You go out to win every game. But I think for John McNulty, which he has done very, very well this year, he's looking to build this young squad, getting game time in a provincial championship decider into these young players. You know, there's still a lot of experience there. You know, I'm looking at, you've Niamh McLaughlin, Katie Heron, Suzanne White, Amy Boyle Carr, really experienced players. Claire Freel has been phenomenal for Donegal in goals this year throughout the league. She's been very, very impressive young player. But yeah, look, you just have to look at Armagh. I mean, throughout the league, they built in every game and they were so impressive, Shane, in that league final. No more than, you know, Connacht, they haven't had a provincial, or they, excuse me, they haven't had a competitive game in a good few weeks. So will they be cold coming into it? Possibly. But I just don't think Donegal have enough. I think especially around the middle third there, you know, we talk about her all the time, but Caroline O'Hanlon, Lara McConville, Niamh Coleman. And I just think with Donegal as well, you know, there's nobody really to take hold of Amy Mackin, and I think Donegal will bring players back. You might have to see, you know, Niamh McLaughlin sacrifice her threat up front and come back and give them a hand. But look, I just hope that it is a competitive game and it's not a Dublin Meath case.
Yeah.
I really hope so. I just, for Donegal football in general. And look, I sat here and said the exact same thing last year. They turned them over. I hope I'm completely wrong again this year, but it's hard to see anything other than Armagh.
We shall see. Nadine, thank you as always. Great chatting. We're taking a short break, then we'll be live to Dalymount Park. RTE 2FM. We can hear some voices, I should say, because RTE Sports News Eastern correspondent has been speaking to some of the players and indeed management involved in this very unique and very special occasion at Dalymount Park this evening.
This may look like it's a football match, but it's much more than that for us. It's a way to convey our message and to like make sure that the solidarity between the Palestinian people and the Irish people will always exist.
From a footballing point of view, how important is it that the team gets together at this juncture? Because I know it's not always easy for the team to come together, is it?
Yeah, as a team manager, it's been crazy to get all the players together. We haven't had the chance to practice all together, all the full 22 members of the team until now, and some of our players have not been able to make it to Ireland as well. So one of the most of the biggest obstacles we face as Palestinians and Palestinian athletes is the freedom of movement within the Palestinian territories. In a football perspective, that does affect the harmony of the team and like the level of the team, but at the same time, this is how we live as Palestinians. We're used to that and we are very resilient as people. Me personally, I've stopped playing. Like, I used to be the team captain not so long ago. After the war happened, I decided to stop because I could not do it physically. Like, mentally, it was too much, too draining for me to play football. And I can see how hard it is for other players as well. It's really hard for them to focus and be 100% mentally prepared for the match. We do our best as a management team, but it's always challenging.
I'm Mira Natour. I'm a Palestinian national team soccer player. A lot of girls have different stories. One have lost, like, one of their families. One, like, brothers or even cousins, they gone into the jail. Despite the challenges and despite the circumstances we are facing, we have the rights to play soccer, we have the rights to travel. We deserve respect. This game and being in Ireland is like being home in Palestine. Here you can express your feeling. You can say I'm a Palestinian, you know, because in Palestine I can't give any symbol that I'm Palestinian. Even I can't wear colors that have a Palestinian flag. But here it's like I'm living in my home.
My name is Robin Baird and I'm a Bohemians FC football player. It's a huge event here, I suppose. It shows, I think, the solidarity between the two countries, and I think all the girls were just ecstatic to be a part of an event that will most definitely go down in history. Like,